From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection this hour was made in the spring of 2019 when a man had a seizure while walking into a parking lot after his workout. Steve Roll grew up with epilepsy, but it was well controlled, and he had gone around 10 years without a seizure. That day in 2019, as he was being hauled into an ambulance, he writes that it occurred to him he was not going to be allowed to drive a car for at least 6 months. Writing for Reconnect Rochester, Roll says, quote, "I was scared of losing my independence to get around because I relied solely on my car for transportation. That's why this is called car dependency," end quote. But Steve learned that he could do a lot of traveling without a car. It was a significant change, and we'll find out this hour if he would say it's changed his life for the better. His story is part of a new series on Reconnect Rochester that is all about going car light. Not fully car-free, if that's not possible, but car light. Could you do it? One generation that is doing it is Gen Z. Gen Z is driving less. They are less likely to have a driver's license than previous generations. In fact, the percentage of young people with driver's licenses has been steadily declining since the 1980s. Here's a number. 1983, 80% of 18-year-old Americans had a driver's license. Today, it's down to less than 60%. Some of the reason is economic. Some of it is cultural and lifestyle. And we're going to talk this hour about what it means to go car light. Our guest this hour includes Steve Roll, a board member now for Reconnect Rochester. Welcome. Thank you for being with us.
Thank you for having me.
Chaz Goodman's a marketing and outreach manager for Reconnect Rochester. Welcome, Chaz. Thanks for being here.
Happy to be here.
Sarah Jenks is a Rochester resident that I was looking at. I think it's 7 or 8 years since we last talked on this program. How are you?
I'm good. I'm happy to be back. Thanks.
And you're not... you're still in that category. Well, how would you categorize yourself? Car light, car...
I would say I'm car light now. I think the first time I was here, I was 98% car free.
All right. Car light. Still able to do a car light lifestyle.
Correct.
All right. We're going to talk about how. By the way, I love these Gen Z numbers because Gen Z, you know, I remember turning 16 and the pressure, it's like, well, you know, you got to get your license. You got to. And now Gen Z's like, why? It's amazing how often you talk to people now who are 16, 17, 18, like, do you have a license? They're like, why would I have a license? Like, well, what do I want to own a car for? They're so expensive. I mean, you hear this all the time. You're all nodding. We're not Gen Zers, but you know, I mean, isn't that interesting? Don't you think, Sarah?
Yeah, for sure. I remember when I took the permit test on my 16th birthday, and we got into the neighborhood, and my mom said, all right, you get in the driver's seat now, and I cried. And so I think that was, I cried.
Why?
I think I knew that this, I don't want to be handling this 3-ton killing machine. And now I love not having my own car. It is definitely frees up my ability to save for other things that a lot of people my age can't do.
Do you look back and think, okay, that was a normal reaction of fear? Or do you think... you know, we don't need to have that much anxiety. We should just have, like, I mean, that's a lot of anxiety.
No, I think it was a normal reaction of fear. But in retrospect, I can create a fun story.
There you go. Chaz, what do you make of Gen Z's habits here? What do you think?
I think it's very appropriate, and it just shows that we can't rely on the same methods decade after decade. I think I was an anti-car activist before I knew what it was. I would watch movies in New York City, be like, it's so cool that they have like a subway. I wish we had that, not realizing that we did. And so me and my brothers would ride our bikes down Holt Road in Webster, being terrified to try and just go to a store just so we could get out and do something when we were 14, because we wanted the freedom to just go do something and not just be in our neighborhood in our cul-de-sac. And so I think, yeah, it was something I always wish there were other options. So it's nice to see young people say, why are we stuck in this car? And it kind of combats that cars equal freedom narrative.
Anti-car activist.
I shouldn't say anti-car activist. I'm not trying to box out cars. I do use a car. I own a car. I think it's just wanting choice is a better way to put it.
See, Howard Decker would not want you to couch that. I mean, is Howard Decker still connected? This wonderful guy who, we haven't talked to Howard in a while, and I hope he's doing well. But Howard has never going to hesitate to tell us how many parking lots we have in the city, how many parking lots we have in our lives. We don't need more pavement. We don't need more cars. You know, he would say, don't back off that anti-car.
I think all that's to say is that I think there are many benefits to leaving the car behind. But I also understand, you know, build a big tent. I'm not trying to alienate anyone, because that's also just on that topic. I think people always say, oh, don't tell Chaz I drove here or something. I'm not anti-car. Car light is about, could this trip be something other than a car?
Absolutely. And we're going to talk about how. Go ahead, Sarah.
In response to your and Howard's point about all the parking lots, I have an exciting update since the last time I was here, where I used to live in downtown Rochester at Franklin and Pleasant Street, which is where like St. Joe's Park is, if people know it. That four-way stop is flanked on all four corners by surface level parking lots. And that's where I hosted my first two parking day events. Howard Decker was a special speaker there. And in the time since then, there's now a housing development on one of those former surface parking lots. So things are changing for the better.
Nobody ever saw a great piece of land as like, you know what I can do with this? Look at all the parking spaces I can put here.
Unfortunately, someone did say that.
Yeah, in this case, apparently a lot of people have said that. Steve Roll, what do you make of Gen Z's habits?
Yeah, I think it's great to be able to question how we get around and not just go with the default option. Especially, cars are so expensive these days. I think the average cost of car ownership is over $10,000 a year. So if a family can go with one fewer cars in their lives, they can save a lot of money and have a lot more financial stability in their lives. And I think that's a huge thing. So focusing on how do we get around versus I need a car to get around.
Well, listeners, if you want to share your thoughts about being car light, car free, perhaps changing your habits, are you able to not use a car to get to work, to get to the store, maybe to get to your kids' games, wherever you're going? Or, you know, if you want to talk about, you know, maybe you've got family, maybe you've got kids who are Gen Z, maybe you've seen some of the shift in ideas. Maybe you are Gen Z. We've got plenty of Gen Z listeners and watchers here. It's 844-295-TALK. It's toll-free, 844-295-8255, 263-WXXI for your call from Rochester, 263-9994. Or you can email the program connections@WXXI.org. You can join the chat if you're watching on YouTube on the WXXI News YouTube channel. You should be watching live with us from noon to 2 every afternoon. Well, not on Saturdays and Sundays most of the time, but there we are. So we'd love to hear from you. And I'm going to start with Steve. I was reading Steve's story because Reconnect Rochester has started collecting these stories about going car light and why people did so and different circumstances. So I mentioned off the top of the show, back in 2019, you had a seizure. And what do you remember about that feeling? You write a little bit about that in the piece, which I thought was interesting. I mean, it was literally on your mind as you're going into the ambulance. Tell me about that.
I grew up with epilepsy. I've had it since I was a kid, and it's well controlled. So it just hasn't been an issue day to day for years. And then, unfortunately, I had a seizure again back in 2019. And I remember from my time when I was a teenager that having a seizure here in New York, that means that you're not allowed to drive for at least 6 months. And so as I basically regained consciousness, I mean, that was my first thought. That was my first thing I was thinking about is I'm not going to be able to drive for at least 6 months. You know, how am I going to get around? How am I going to go get groceries? How am I going to run errands? How am I just going to like live my life, right? And I realized that I didn't want to be stuck at home. I didn't want to be dependent on my family and friends to drive me around. And so I got a bike. And for the first time as an adult, I was never a bike rider as an adult. And then I also got a bus pass. I learned how to use the bus. And between the bike and the bus, that really helped me maintain my independence during that time period. And so I think that's something important. When we only get around by car, you know, there are a lot of reasons why someone might lose that option, whether it's from finances, say a car suddenly breaks down, a medical event, or if someone sort of ages out of driving. So having different mobility options is important on a personal level and in as a community.
What is your transportation regimen these days?
I take the bus a good amount, and I also bike a lot. I actually did both coming over out here, so you can actually put a bike on the front rack in the bus. And so I took the bus to the transit center with my bike on it because I was a little lazy this morning. And then I rode the rest of the way. And it's a great way to use both of them.
How long did it take you after your seizure in 2019 to go from dreading what that meant for your transportation to thinking, in a way, this might have been a good thing that this happened?
That's a great question. I would say within a few months, one of the things I've realized riding around on a bike is that whenever I finish a trip on a bike, I always feel better getting off of a bike and getting to my destination. And I've never felt that way after sitting in traffic and getting to a parking spot. And so that's something I really enjoyed. And there's a good bike community in this city. And one of the things I found really helpful when I first got my bike is I was quite nervous riding around on the streets in Rochester, as I'm sure anyone would be. And I took a bike class through Reconnect Rochester. Jesse Piers, the cycling instructor, leads that. And it helps you understand how to ride your bike safely on the streets along with other traffic. And that really helped me out a ton. And I felt a lot more confident and a lot more comfortable riding around with my bike to, say, go to the public market or go other places.
This didn't take long. Pat wants to know, you're riding your bike on a day like today. Aren't you sweating when you get off the bike?
You just have to be more conscious of the type of clothing that you're using. And you can always bike a little slower. You don't need to be in a race to get wherever you need to go. You can ride a little slower.
You're not riding for the yellow jersey. You're in the Peloton. You're good with a Peloton. We do not need to win the stage.
That's right.
We don't need to be sweating like we're in a breakaway group.
Absolutely.
There. Okay. You get used to it, though. I mean, it sounds like, Steve, I mean, you can understand why Pat's asking, but you get into a rhythm. You get into a habit, a routine with it.
Yeah. And you just need to be a little bit more conscious of what you're going to be wearing. And one thing that I'll say is that it's helpful to not have too many layers on at first, because if you're riding a bike, you warm up pretty quickly.
37 and breezy today, but I love it. I mean, like, you're doing it. So that's Steve's story. And by the way, we're going to link to Steve, Chaz, and what the team at Reconnect has been doing in our show notes if you want to check that out when this program gets posted on wxxinews.org/connections later today, or it's a dash slash. I don't know what a dash and a slash is. You know what I'm talking about. Or wherever your podcasts are sold. Let me turn to Chaz Goodman, who is marketing and outreach manager for Reconnect Rochester. Your situation was a little different. And, you know, you said you've always preferred biking to driving. And you spent most of your adult life car-free or car-light until you had kids.
Yeah.
Take me through some of the change and what you wanted people to understand in your piece for Reconnect.
Yeah, and also just to add on to that question on, like, don't you get hot or don't you sweat, I think that is a big part of the narrative that we're trying to address with Reconnect Rochester, is that there are so many people who think it's for young, able-bodied people who are there to go for a race and who do, like, centuries, like 100-mile bike rides, and that's just not the case. I know people who bike in their business suits and just go there and, you know, it's just about regular people biking and making sure that anyone who wants to can. So that's a big part of our mission, is just to make sure. So, hey, you don't have to sweat. You can just have a nice, normal ride to work. And it's a great way to get outside on a beautiful day. People unroll their windows. So what if you didn't have to have windows? But
And interestingly enough, you were used to that kind of routine. Then you had kids and you started flipping. You started driving all the time.
Yeah. So that was my story. So when I was 22, I moved to Chicago after college and just sort of brought my bike, because my dad is a big recreational cyclist, but he's also done cycle commuting. And he's like, you should bring your bike. And I'm like, yeah, sure, I guess. And then I remember I was going to a job interview and I was looking at like the instructions for the bus. I'm like, oh, I have to transfer buses. I'm not sure how to do that. So I just got on my bike and did that. And like only a 22-year-old can, I just went through the streets not thinking anything and just going, oh, this is fine, and not really worrying about it. And then by the time I was old enough to be thinking, is this safe, I was just very used to it. And I realized it is safe as long as you are biking defensively. And Jesse, I took Jesse's cycling class as well after I'd been a cycling commuter for 9 years at that point. And I was like, oh, okay, this is really helpful, because it took me 9 years or so of just experience to see how to bike defensively and everything. But then, yes, then I had kids, and that's when I became just so much more aware of the stuff I'd been blissfully unaware of, which is that the infrastructure is lacking, and Rochester has good methods to get around, but we could always be doing better. And when my two little boys are in that bike trailer, I want to make sure that they're safe.
How old are the boys?
They're now 4 and 2. So when they were each infants, I just didn't want to put an infant on a bicycle. So
sure.
I spent, you know, the last 3 or so years just driving them anytime I had to take them. And, you know, like Steve said, I just feel better when I bike. And it was just hard for me because it's important to me to bike, and I want them to see that. So I'm really happy that I can show them how much it matters.
We're going to return in a moment to Chester. There's an awesome story about what he heard his son saying in the trailer the other day. Before we get to that, though, you say that you've really had your eyes open to the lacking in infrastructure. So let me ask all three of you. What do we need most that isn't necessarily the full list of pie in the sky, but realistically, if we're doing one thing to make infrastructure better right now, what is it?
I would say flex posts. Those are, you know, just sort of a border of some kind between the bike lane and the road itself. This is a visual cue for drivers to give space. You know, they don't want to scratch up their cars, and it just shows that this is something that matters. The painted bike lanes are nice, but just something a little more concrete, just to separate and show that this is something that matters.
Do you think sometimes drivers think that painted bike lane's nice because that just gives me a little more room to go wide?
I don't think very many are consciously thinking that, but I think it's not something, I think, you know, it's something that they don't consider a huge barrier.
You are nodding right along over there, Sarah. So what is the infrastructure change that's needed?
I would say smaller street design, because barrier is taken, but that would be part of it. Making the street smaller is something that allows a driver, not even consciously, to drive slower and drive more aware. So I think I give an example of driving on, say, Park Avenue in Berkeley. Drivers naturally want to drive slowly because they don't want to hit a person or something that's coming out of the street. Whereas, like, closer to where I live, going from Strong Hospital to downtown on Mount Hope Avenue, there's you can see very easily side to side, and it's easy for cars to drive 45 and 50 miles an hour down this area that still has a lot of pedestrians.
I just want to build on that point before Chad. Let me just make you guys have already lit up the emails, and we're going to struggle to probably get everything in this hour, which is great. We're talking to a team from Reconnect Rochester about going car light. And Sarah, when you talk about Park Ave, is it 25 miles an hour on Park Ave, most of Park Avenue, or is it 30?
I don't think there's a 25 in the city.
Is it 30 or 35?
It's 30 across the city. Fortunately, there was just a state bill that passed that allowed towns and cities to unilaterally lower their speed limit. So maybe in the future it'll be lower.
So the reason I bring that up is Park Avenue is not a straight line. So when I drive it, I'm more conscious of being aware, looking for pedestrians, looking for people who are crossing, understanding that it doesn't loop, but it kind of drifts and turns a little bit. So it's not a drag race. Whereas I live in Shalott, and Lake Avenue, that's the drag race. It's just, you can see what the design of infrastructure does. And Chaz wrote that you are more annoyed with road design than drivers. So I think in many ways, you know, you can get angry at drivers, but they are part of a system that has encouraged cars to dominate, cars to go nuts, as opposed to, you know, and I know that, again, we're not going back to old Europe-style pre-automobile design, But, well, Sarah's going to, what was that? What did you just mouth at me?
Why not?
Why not?
Europe is. They're doing it. Yeah. They're going back from the mistakes of the Robert Moses era.
Okay, fair enough, Chaz.
I just, I did want to say, yes, like we definitely, and that is, I am more focused on the design of our streets because, again, I'm not here to shame people for driving and I understand why they drive. I just also wanted to add our cycling manager, Jesse, is always talking about the need to connect our bike spine network because we have lots of good bicycle boulevards, which are calmer streets that have speed humps and are safer bikers, or we have bike lanes, but they end and then they don't connect for a half mile or so in many places in the city. So that's, I know Jesse would say, connect the spine. That is our big ask. So.
Okay. Go ahead, Steve.
Yeah, I'll jump on that and say, I think that's probably the biggest thing that we need is really having a connected network of ideally protected bike lanes so that everyone of all ages and abilities can feel comfortable getting around. I know that from my neighborhood, I live over in the North Winton Village, and on East Main, there's a segment up to about where the public market is, and I can ride on that on a nice cycle track off of the road, but then that ends right there at Goodman, I think. And so I can't take that way to actually go downtown, even though it's Main Street, because it just feels too dangerous. And so I have to take a much more circuitous route around some of the neighborhoods down near Park Ave, which adds about another mile or so of riding and more time. And that's the only way I can really get down there safely. And so having a true network of safe infrastructure is really going to be the key.
Define a protected bike lane for people who don't bicycle.
I'll give you an example. So the this last week, a few of us were down in D.C. for the bike summit, the National Bike Summit, and it was awesome riding around there. On a lot of their streets, what they had is sort of like a two-way bike lane on the side of the road, and there was a small curb, like concrete curb, separating the bike lane from the travel lanes. And it made you feel very safe and comfortable riding in that bike lane. And I think it would be a lot more comfortable as a driver as well, because you don't need to worry about a bicyclist kind of coming over into the travel lane. They're in their lane, you're in your lane, and everyone can get along happily. So I think that everyone who hates passing a cyclist when they're driving should be a big proponent of protected bike lanes.
And also, it's better to have them on a bike than in a car, also contributing to traffic.
Absolutely.
Sarah, do you agree with Chad's point that it's more important to be annoyed with road design than drivers?
I do, yeah. You know, a fish doesn't know it's in the sea or whatever. our systems are built this way to have, you know, cars, you know, be aggressive. And we continue to build out more and more infrastructure that supports car dependency. And it's hard. We as cyclists and pedestrians and, you know, people waiting for the bus are just getting in driver's way. To where they need to go. I understand it.
Well, I want to read this story that Chaz shares in his piece for Reconnect Rochester. You're right. I heard my son in the trailer when you were bicycling.
Yeah.
Saying happy, sad, mad, mad, sad, happy, sad. And I realized he was observing the facial expressions of people in their cars. And he said sad and mad a lot. And it got me thinking about how dehumanizing it is to be stuck in a car. If someone cuts you off, you feel rage. You don't think about them as a person. You just see the big machines that you both have to operate. You're angry because you could have easily been hurt. Driving is a very high-stakes activity. End quote. Boy, is that the 4-year-old, 3-year-old at the time?
That's, yeah, he was 3 at the time.
Three years old, from the mouths of babes. Sometimes the wisdom is hard to refute, isn't it?
It was, yeah, it's incredible. And it just, that's what I was thinking of is when I drive, I think that's part of, like, I like being outside and getting the exercise on my bike. But when I drive, I see other cars as an obstacle to a parking spot or an obstacle to making the green light or something. And you just don't view them as people. But when you're biking with people, I've, you know, gotten close to someone. It's like, oh, excuse me. And they say, no problem, you know, because you see the person. And I think there's a lot of value in that.
I mean, Louis C.K. was right when he said, we are our worst selves when we're driving. The way we talk to other human beings, we would never say things in person. They couldn't, if they could hear us, the amount of cursing we do at other people, just because now we might be 36 seconds later getting home. It's pretty remarkable. But I just love that little vignette of your child observing happy, but sad, mad, mad, sad, sad, mad.
He's very sharp.
Wow. By the way, you were able to work out the best route to bike to daycare, and I know that's been a process for you. How are things going with that now?
They're going great. There is a bike lane on Elmwood in Brighton. So I live in Brighton, and we go to the daycare on South Clinton, the Doodlebugs there. And there's a bike lane on Elmwood, and I am the number one defender of that bike lane on the Nextdoor social media app. Because I know, you know, I think there are some people who are frustrated when it was going in, and I just wanted to at least be a voice to say this really matters to us. And it's been transformative, and it was perfect timing, just as my boys are getting old enough to ride in the bike trailer. And then we cut through Lac de Ville rather than deal with that intersection at South Clinton and Elmwood, which is just a little dicey.
Sarah Jenks, what is your typical routine now as a car light person?
Yeah, my typical routine is in the colder months, I take the bus to work every day, and I'm very fortunate that my employer gives us free bus passes. So if you work for the city of Rochester, go get your free bus pass. So I'm save so much money that way, and I am so fortunate, but I also like live my life intentionally so that I can live somewhere where I could take the bus to work every day. So I just take one bus, and then I bike and I walk in the warmer months. And then I started doing some like winter sports activities, and that's what I have to drive out to the suburbs in a car for. I do that like 3 times a week. I wish I could bike, but it's just, you know, it's late and it's cold and it's icy.
Any idea how many miles a year you drive in these days?
Oh, so 20 times 50, probably 1,500 miles.
And that's not a lot of miles.
Okay.
Yeah. Maybe it feels like a lot to you. That is not a lot of miles. That's the definition of car light. Is there anything that, besides winter activities that you talked about, is there anything that has been more difficult than others? Are you able to get to stores? Are you able to do things that you need to, errands and things?
Yeah, so I'm fortunate but I have a different life from, say, Chaz, where I don't have dependents who rely on me. So I can also like just grab one bag of groceries on the way home from work 3 days a week, as opposed to doing one massive haul once a week. And I just, it's this way that I've decided to live my life. I kind of like end up living a smaller life. I don't need as much stuff. I don't need to go do a haul at Walmart. I don't have anywhere to put that haul. So I just kind of changed my life to make it work.
Although the bike trailer does have a trunk with plenty of room for grocery bags, too.
Sounds like someone who's done it.
Once or twice, yeah.
I also want to make sure that we're not forgetting about people for whom like biking isn't really the easiest. So
sure.
We do have, while our bus system is pretty bad as far as systems go, it works for a lot of people. And I think one thing that none of the three of us said as our one thing that we would like to see, but I'm sure we all think about, is like massively improving and continuing to fund the RTS system and making sure that, you know, drivers or there's enough operators to carry out like a well-functioning system. So RTS is continually improving. I think on demand is a really cool thing for people who live far away, but like still want to try out public transit. And I know that like they're having trouble getting enough operators. And so this is all bigger than just like what somebody wants to do. Somebody might even want to try taking the bus, but there aren't enough bus operators or something. So there's the idea of being car light is supported by all of these factors, and it's not just street design that is holding us back.
Well, here's an email from Alex on kind of on that subject. Alex writes, "It's the same push we've seen with plant-based diets. 60% of households bought plant-based food within the last year, but only about 4% of Americans self-identify as vegetarian. People will choose these options if they're available and good. Too bad breaking our car habits requires more infrastructure than that. New York City's recent free fare pilot study showed a 30% jump in ridership, with almost half of riders doing so for leisure. You have to remove barriers to entry." Sarah?
So something that I've been kicking myself about since I was last on your show is that I didn't have a response to something that you said, which was that then board president of Reconnect would love to see people riding the bus in suits. And I don't know why I had a knee-jerk reaction that that wasn't quite right, and I don't think would be exactly what she thought anyway. We want people in suits to ride the bus, yes, but it's the fact that the barrier to entry is so high because it's so inconvenient that why they would just choose to drive. We need to make the system in Rochester work for everyone, typically the most marginalized people, and that will allow the system to be the great system that it can be, and then anyone's going to want to ride the bus because it's great. It's the best alternative.
What do you think, Steve?
Yeah, and I would say I've ridden the bus a couple times with a suit. So it can be a great way to get downtown. If you have an event going on downtown, you just jump on the bus and it takes you right down there, and no need to worry about parking or paying for parking.
Well, we now have a small mountain of email correspondence and YouTube comments on the YouTube chat from the WXXI News YouTube page for people watching along on there. We got to get our only break of the hour. We're going to come back. We're going to take your feedback. We're going to tell you about a Wednesday meeting that they want you to know about, New Yorkers for Transportation Equity, if you're interested in that. And again, we're going to link to some of the pieces that our guests have put together for you to think about a car light lifestyle. Chaz Goodman, Steve Roll with Reconnect Rochester. Sarah Jenks is back with us, a Rochester resident, and this is our only break of the hour. I'm Evan Dawson. Tuesday on The Next Connections, mushroom coffee, vitamin A, the keto diet. Food fads are all over social media. Influencers want to tell you what to eat or what not to eat, but what do dietitians say? They will put some truth to the conversation and help us sort it all out. Then in our second hour, Rochester's home to a number of resources that can support families with medically fragile children. We'll talk about them with our guests. This is Connections. We've got a lot to squeeze in the last 20 minutes or so here. First of all, Steve, in our brief break, Steve Roll from Reconnect Rochester was mentioning that you can use Google Maps to do what?
Yeah, if you plug in your work or some destination that you usually go to, you can push a little button to see what it would be like to take public transit there versus the car directions or bike directions as well. And you can easily see if it would be a convenient, easy route to take a bus on. And so that's a good idea if you want, if you're curious about this.
And
about
it's pretty
how
helpful?
Pretty absolutely. And then if you do want to use the bus sometime, the transit app is a good way to use that. You can buy a bus pass on there and you use that to just jump on the bus.
And before we came back here, Chaz, you wanted to jump in there too. Go ahead.
Just a quick comment, and that I've spoken to, I know our bus system is actually one of the more affordable ones in the country, and they are reliable for their schedule that they have. What we really would like to see is more frequency, restoring more of that 15-minute service, even building towards 5 or 10-minute service so you don't even have to check the schedule to go. But it's $3 a day capped, so you can't spend more than $3 a day to ride the bus, which is pretty incredible and pretty accessible. So we just want to make sure they're frequent.
Pretty important information there. Okay, a lot of feedback. Let's get through. We're going to go rapidly here. Bob says, hey, Evan, whenever I've gone to a place with a pedestrian mall, I've come back wanting the same thing here. Think Ithaca Commons or Church Street Marketplace in Burlington. Is anyone around here working on such a thing? What could I do to help make that happen? That's a good question. Chaz, what do you think?
I would say yes. I think that is the best thing to do. It shows people. I mean, these are tourist destinations where people go to walk around. They drive their cars to somewhere so they can walk around. So these are highly
desirable. I literally did it last summer at the Commons in Ithaca. Loved spending time there.
It's incredible. I will say we have a weekly mobility action alert so you can sign up for on our website, reconnectrochester.org. And every week we send out an email saying, the city government or the government is considering this. Here's how you can help. And if you want to get more pedestrian spaces, that is the place to find out about it. Our advocacy team is very on top of all of the initiatives happening.
Yeah, I mean, even thinking of Linden Street in Geneva, which isn't, you know, is mostly often free of cars. It's a wonderful place to walk. There's multiple businesses, place to grab a bite or a drink. It's not as big as the Commons, Bob, but for sure Geneva has taken that on board and said we want more of this. So, but you got to advocate for it, don't you?
Yeah, we're building an army of people who care about this stuff, or not building an army. We're building a good group of people who care about this.
I mean, an army is fine, but
sure.
Anyway, yeah, Chaz,
tone down my militant language.
Go ahead, Sarah.
I think there are two existing or upcoming projects in downtown Rochester that might be of interest to Bob. And I think my suggestion for anyone who has any interest in advocating is just kind of like see what exists now, go to a public meeting or see if you can, you know, get an invite to a private meeting and see how people talk about these things. And so you can have work on your own toolbox to start advocating for things. So I know there's one project that is connected with Rock the Riverway. That would be maybe Broad Street. Court Street. Does anyone remember which bridge?
Yes, the Rock the Aqueduct. It's on Broad Street.
So yeah, look up online about if there are any public meetings coming up or if you just want to talk to people about how they're advocating for that. And then there's another one, I think at Main and Clinton, people have, it's just a development parcel. Those buildings that are being rebuilt where it used to be like Dixie Wigs. Many years ago, and there's maybe a pedestrian mall going to be nearby there, which I think would be cool near the transit center, as long as people's, you know, existing needs are still met and important buildings aren't going away.
Anything to add there, Steve?
No, but I guess I would say that I love those types of places too, and it's amazing when people go on vacation to other places or, you know, go to Disney World, right? Disney World is a car-free place, and people are walking around and loving it, and people want to see more of those types of opportunities and places.
Mari says, my mom is 91 years old in Japan. She has never learned to drive because she can go anywhere by bus or train. She walks to grocery stores, keeps herself healthy because of her daily physical activities. If we have decent and reliable public transportation in the United States, it is easy for seniors to go around and live by themselves. And she says, by the way, my mom lives in a town of 200,000 people. It's not very populated, but the transportation is sufficiently designed. Rochester is roughly 200,000. So that's a pretty good analog there. And that is a 91-year-old resident who's never needed to own a car. Never needed to. Go ahead, Sarah.
Yeah, based on what Steve said about traveling and what you just said about Japan, I think that international travel is a great entree into learning about urbanism, learning about walking and biking and accessible modes of transit. Like when you go somewhere else, maybe you're already feeling adventurous. You're in Italy or something. Maybe now is the time when you could try taking a bus or a light rail and see how cities that are similar in size to Rochester are investing in transit in ways that, you know, we just aren't in New York State. And it's pretty eye-opening experience.
Steve?
Yeah, I would just add, you know, especially over the next decade or two, you know, more and more Americans are going to probably age out of driving or want to be in places where they don't need to be reliant on a car. And having more walkable neighborhoods, having more transit, more of those types of options, mobility options, will help people to live without needing a car.
Jess?
Just one quick thing. Dr. Scott McRae, who's a big supporter of Reconnect Rochester, he always likes to say, you're safer on your bike than on your couch. So people who get nervous about biking, it's such a health consideration. And it's a good way to just get your exercise. And that's the key to longevity.
So let me get back to the YouTube chat here. There's a bunch, and I'll try to squeeze in as much as we can. If you've emailed, we'll try to get a lot in here. DM says a couple things. More RTS bus shelters would be helpful, and having Wi-Fi service on the bus would also be great, and outlets to plug in. Okay, that's on the menu of asks for RTS, and when their CEO is back with us on the program soon, we'll bring those up. Everybody agree? Those
yeah, amenities are key. Like standing next to a pole with no seating is tough.
Yeah, absolutely.
Especially in the elements, yeah.
Okay. DM, thank you for that. On YouTube, a commenter is more critical of RTS's on-demand, says it hasn't been reliable. So I just want to ask if our guests have used the on-demand RTS service, have had a similar or different experience. Sarah?
I use it pretty, maybe I try to use it once a month, and I am. When it first started, I was very successful, and I was a huge proponent of on-demand. You can also put your bike on the front of an on-demand vehicle, just like with a typical RTS bus. So it really opens up like all of Monroe County. However, these days, I've heard word on the street is that they are low on operators. And so it is, even if one tries to schedule 24 hours in advance, there often just isn't availability. But it is an amazing service if it were to be able to actually serve in the way that it's intended. I think it would also be a really nice starting point for folks who live in the suburbs to try public transit. So when it's working, it's amazing, but I hear that caller's complaints.
Okay. You guys, any experience to share there?
I haven't used on-demand myself. I mean, that might be a good way to try something out. I've always used the fixed route, I guess normal bus, you might say. And so I think if you are near a bus route, that's probably the way to go, because you won't need to worry about delays or not being able to get in on demand.
Maybe this is the next WXXI investigation we should do. See how on demand's doing. I know they're committed to doing it well, but we'll see. A different comment on the YouTube chat. A viewer says it's usually going somewhere by car, 15 minutes, taking the transit, 1 hour and 15 minutes.
Yeah.
Steve.
Yeah, absolutely. And so this is one of the big issues here in Rochester. And I'll share, about a month ago, I had to get down to an appointment at Clinton Crossings. And we had gotten some snowfall. And the roads were kind of slushy and gross. And I'm not that hardcore. I didn't want to bike it. And so I ended up having to take the bus. And what would have been a nice 10-minute drive, or maybe a 15-minute bike ride, it was about an hour and 10 minutes. And so that is the challenge with transit here. Sometimes it can just be almost as fast as driving. But if you have to take a transition at like the transit center, then it can be an hour. And so transit needs to be better and more frequent here.
Frequency is our ask, definitely.
Yeah.
Tess writes on a couple of subjects, points to what's going on in Europe. I mean, you heard Sarah say earlier this hour, why can't we design it the way Europe is doing it? You can design is a choice. Tess points to a piece from Streets Blog by Ben Fried on the origin of Holland's Stop Murdering Children street safety movement. I'm going to read a little bit from this. Since the 1970s, the Netherlands and the United States have taken different paths when it comes to engineering streets. While the Dutch tackled traffic deaths and injuries by designing local streets where walking and biking are safe, convenient ways to get around, the prevalent approach in America was to apply highway design principles to local streets. Wider and straighter was thought to be safer. The superiority of the Dutch approach turned out to be dramatic. In 1975, the traffic death rate in the Netherlands was 20% higher than in America, but by 2008, it was 60% lower. About 22,000 fewer people would die on U.S. streets each year if the nation had achieved safety outcomes comparable to the Dutch. Remarkable. And again, straight-line streets designed like grids and highways to accommodate automobile traffic did not turn out to be safer for pedestrians. I mean, the data is really clear. Now you're making me sound like an anti-car activist, Chaz.
Well, it's contagious.
but I appreciate Tess sending that bit of historical data. And Tess says the following about biking in Europe. She says, after decades of biking in Rochester, I'm biking these days in Switzerland. There is absolutely tension here between motorists and bicyclists. But here, the very blunt campaign to stop child murder on our roadways began in the 1970s. It's brought about changes in infrastructure like protected bike lanes, and that has made all the difference. So Tess says, Europe's not magical. There's still tension, and cars are still sometimes in tension with drivers, but it's about culture, education, and design.
So. Absolutely. And, you know, safety is a big thing here. You know, Rochester has put out a Vision Zero plan. And one thing to remember is that when bike lanes go in and protected bike lanes go in, they make the whole system safer. They make it safer for bicyclists, pedestrians, and drivers alike. And in the U.S. and in Rochester in particular, pedestrian deaths are at really pretty stark highs. I know, I believe Rochester has the top pedestrian deaths per capita, I think, or traffic deaths per capita in for cities in the New York. And that's one of the reasons why the mayor has tried to lead on Vision Zero.
Okay. And just wanted to clarify, because I've talked about Vision Zero and some people have questions. That's the goal of zero traffic deaths in a year. And it and some people have said that's impossible, but it has happened in New Jersey, it has happened in Oregon, and it is definitely possible to have zero traffic deaths. And that is part of what we're trying to change, is just not accepting traffic deaths as an inevitability, because it's not.
Yeah, I'll add to that. I mean, let's think about how we think about air traffic safety. Right. If a plane goes down, it is a huge deal, mm-hmm. and it should be. And people go in to figure out what are the root causes. Why did this happen? Not trying to point blame, but trying to figure out what caused this to happen.
You don't think we point blame in air traffic problems now? Anyway, that's a whole separate thing. I think what Steve means is ideally we don't just throw blame. Go ahead.
Yeah, absolutely. But we certainly don't do that with traffic fatalities. You know, we see that drip, drip, drip of daily, you know, deaths and traffic crashes in Rochester and in New York. And it's just... people just are kind of numb to it. And
either you blame the individual but not the system, or you kind of just go, oh, it's another accident.
Or you get mad at the road design.
Yeah. Tara?
I want to thank the viewer, Tess, who brought up the study between Netherlands and the United States, because it really shows how modern these decision-making processes are. You know, earlier Evan joked about old European cities, like city planning didn't stop in Europe since, like, these cities were built in the medieval times. I think a lot about small cities in France, cities that are smaller than city of Rochester by population and similar in population density. There's been a massive push for installing fixed routes, like even light rails, across these smaller cities in France in the past 15 years. So these are decisions that we can make now. We can still turn things around and make life safe and accessible without a car.
Ken says, Evan, if you haven't seen the documentary Who Killed the Electric Car, it's pretty interesting, explaining how big oil suppressed public transportation as well as snuffing out EVs in the 1980s. That is from Ken. Jason says, I was car-free for almost a year in Rochester, and my partner and I have been a one-car household for many years. Does that qualify as car light?
Absolutely.
Yeah, that's
okay.
Great.
He says, it's possible but not easy to be car-free in Rochester. I had the luxury of being relatively affluent. I could afford Uber or Lyft when necessary. I was also single and childless. I cannot imagine being car-free with children or without the privilege of having relative affluence. Also, my advice to Americans, do not go to Europe, particularly the Netherlands. Their incredible biking and walking infrastructure will forever ruin the United States for you. That is from Jason.
I do want to point out there are some cities in the U.S. that are doing making some good strides, so it's nice to see that at home, too.
Jason, thank you. Adrian says, we're car light. In 2022, my sister's car finally died, and so my wife and I sold one of our two cars to her. We've been car light, one car, since. We have three kids, 11, 8, and 4. Our plan was, let's say if we can do this for a year, things have made this possible. Biking year-round to work and wherever else. A mother-in-law who helps out by bringing kids to extracurriculars a couple times a week. Living in the city, we're both close to our jobs, groceries, and errands. On that note, I'm going to ask Sarah Jenks, if you want to give two suggestions for going car light, what would you tell people?
Take baby steps. First of all, if you want to try taking transit, for example, pick a day when you don't have anything going on and there's nothing on the line. If you, you know, if it doesn't work out, try going somewhere. If you live in the city, you can get downtown on the bus in one ride. Try that. And then second is when you travel internationally or even around the United States, travel with the idea of what if I'm walking here and I'm comfortable, what's making me feel comfortable? If I'm not comfortable, what is it? What would make me want to walk more?
Well said. And if you want to support what's going on Wednesday night, if you're interested, at 6:30 on Wednesday night, there is a meeting for the New Yorkers for Transportation Equity. Chaz, what is that?
So they are an organization in New York that is trying to offer people choice in mobility. So you have options beyond the car. And again, all this car light, it's not shaming drivers. It's just saying, are there alternatives? And we spend so much money on highway expansions. So their specific ask here is to stop putting more money into highway expansions. We can maintain our existing roads, but considering multimodal options, meaning public transit and bike infrastructure. So yeah, they have a general meeting and you can just look up the New Yorkers for Transportation Equity and look up, and they have a meeting on Wednesday at 6:30. That it's a great way to get started. Call your state reps and make sure they support it.
I'll close with this from David, who's listening in Vancouver, Canada, on the WXXI mobile app. He says, back in 2006, I decided to retire my car. I bought an electric-assisted bike. He says, hey, Vancouver is hilly, and no sweat was the huge advantage. And I bought a monthly bus and train pass. I signed up for a car share service as well, thinking I would occasionally need a car. I've discovered just how good Vancouver transit is, and to this day, I've never rented a car at all. I wish Rochester could be that lucky. Thank you, Dave. Thank you, David. A nice little coda to the hour. If you want to learn more about a car light lifestyle, we'll link on our show notes to what Reconnect Rochester has put together. You'll learn more from Steve Roll, who's a board member. Thanks for being here, Steve.
Absolutely. Thanks.
Chaz Goodman, a marketing and outreach manager for Reconnect Rochester, wearing the coolest shirt in town. Thank you, Chaz.
Thank you.
And thanks to Sarah Jenks, a Rochester resident. Nice to see you back here.
Good to see you, too.
From the whole team at Connections. Thank you for listening. Thank you for watching on the WXXI News YouTube channel. We are back with you tomorrow on member-supported public media.